The Tom Woods Show, episode 2035.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, Tom Woods here. Don't forget you can get one of my books in audiobook format for free. So that includes my book, Real Descent, which is narrated by me. My New York Times bestseller, Meltdown on the Financial Crisis of 2008, featuring a foreword by Ron Paul, Nullification, and others. Just head over to tomwoodsaudio.com, sign up for Audible, and if you decide you don't want Audible, you get to keep the free audiobook they give you anyway. tomwoodsaudio.com. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. Happy New Year. We're ringing in 2022 with a Michael Malice week, and I'm sure the vast majority of you know who Michael Malice is. In addition to being a New York Times best-selling celebrity ghostwriter, he is a successful author in his own right. And we're going to be talking several times this week about a recent volume of his called The Anarchist Handbook. And we did do an episode on that, just on the phenomenon surrounding it. But this week we'll get into the real content of the book. And we're doing it at this particular time because we're recording shortly after the release of the audiobook version. We wanted to let people know that that was available. And we'll talk this week about that, because there are interesting selections for people reading the various chapters. And I read one of the chapters. I read the Murray Rothbard chapter. And I think these varied voices that Michael has chosen to narrate the book make the audiobook version all the more special. So tomwoodsaudio.com is where you can get the audiobook for free. If you sign up for Audible through that link, you get a free audiobook. And then if you don't want to stick with Audible, you don't have to. No hard feelings. You can just leave, but yet keep your free audiobook. And Michael still gets his royalty anyway. Everybody is happy. Old Woods is happy. Malice is happy. You're happy. We're all happy. And of course, one more thing. Michael is the host of You're Welcome, which is produced on the Gas Digital Network. And we're going to talk today about what may lie ahead in 2022, possible scenarios that may unfold for us. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tom.
All right, Michael, we are beginning 2022 here, and we could do a look back on, in fact, I think in some previous year, you and I might have done a year in review, and I think part of the reason was I was desperate to have one more episode, and I just called you up and said, come on, I got to record an episode, help me out here. But this time you were suggesting that maybe we could do a little twist on that and take this historian out of his comfort zone. I generally like to talk about the past because then I'm never wrong. But you want to talk about predictions, especially in light of what we've observed over the past year or two. What do we think is going to happen in the future? So is that really the line you want to take? We could potentially be embarrassingly wrong.
I'm not saying predictions per se, but like, let's just talk through several scenarios that what we think is going to happen in 2022.
All right. Well, the key one, of course, involves what's going to happen with, the United States and other countries around the world, but the United States is a little bit different from other countries, even though, and I'm talking about the COVID stuff, because yeah, we certainly have to talk about that. We don't have the massive numbers of people marching in the streets the way we keep seeing in country after country after country in clips on Twitter. But yet, I feel like the polling data and just the anecdotal sense you get is that there is a larger minority of resistors in the U.S. than in these other countries, even though they're not pouring into the street. I've had so many people email me from other countries to say, you guys are our hope here. The United States, if any place is going to lead us out of this, it's going to be you guys. So having said that, I guess 2021 took a little bit of a turn that I wasn't totally expecting, because as the year went on, as we got to like the middle of the year, I had to start asking my people on my newsletter list, do you want me to pivot away from all the COVID coverage now? And do you think, because it looked like things, even in the blue places, were becoming normal. I mean, Cuomo said they're going to reopen because they got 70% vaccination and whatever. It just looked like things were becoming normal, and it was kind of silly for me to just focus exclusively on that. Like, that's how quickly things were changing. And yeah, Now all of a sudden it's gone back to, it's the worst. It's not the worst, but it's one of the things the conspiracy theorists predicted would happen, is the vaccine passports and mandates and so on. So it pivoted and went down this crazy road. So the question is, what does 2022 possibly have in store for us? What would be one of the scenarios?
Well, what I've been toying with recently, I don't know about, we can talk about COVID in a second. I'm sorry to change tacks, but Joe Manchin just came out and said he's a no vote on the Build Back Better bill, which was the centerpiece basically of Biden's, you know, economic, socioeconomic plans. Yes. They passed the big infrastructure bill. Maybe I'm stupid, I'm definitely stupid, but I don't see how you can run for election on we fixed potholes. Like, that doesn't seem like something that's going to bring out the vote. What brings out the vote is either excitement for a candidate or hatred of a candidate, and you vote against that person. So that seems to be a very, you know, it's kind of odd to think Biden's been in office for 11 and a half months. And as far as his track record, he's got little to show for it. Now, in his defense, they had what, like a 5-seat majority, you know, 220, some crazy short majority in the House. They had a split in the Senate. So they didn't really have a governing coalition, despite the corporate press's claims to the contrary. But I don't think, I could be wrong. Let's hear your thoughts. Do you think Democrats are going to be more doubling down in support of Biden? Or do you think it's going to be like rats fleeing a scurrying ship?
Well,
thinking ship, excuse me.
Well, thinking about what you just said about you tend to come out because you feel really passionate about somebody or you're passionately against them. And I feel when it comes to intensity of feeling about Biden, the hates versus the loves, the hates are way out in front. I think that's been true the whole time. People viewed Biden as the guy that they could accept if they absolutely had to.
Right.
So there's been no enthusiasm about him from the start. And then he's done one thing after another to annoy people. Now, it's true that his really hardcore base favors the COVID stuff, but I'm seeing more and more independent people saying things like, I just can't imagine that we would want to exclude people from basic things for just indefinitely, or we're going to have to obviously learn to live with this. I can't believe my state is talking about locking down again. We're going to have to learn to live with this one way or another. This is stupid. We did everything we were told. We got the vaccine. We got the booster. And
there's no scenario where there's not giving you variants.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think some people are starting to recognize that. And he's got to see that. His speech he gave at the end of December last year, that speech that he gave about how he's going to tackle COVID in the winter months, that could have been a lot worse than it was. I mean, he could have said no air travel for unvaccinated people in that speech. He could have really gone a lot farther than he did. And I think he is trying to seem like he's doing things to appease the base, but also trying to attract the independents who are growing weary of this.
But he had that line about, like, this winter is going to be one of death and despair for the unvaccinated.
Yeah, but I saw even some of his own supporters saying, wow, like, even I cringed at that. Like, that was no call for that. So the question then becomes, so 2022, given that we are looking ahead, is an off-year election. And so what's this going to mean? Now, I don't know anything about any of the Republican candidates running. I mean, you know, obviously they're a lot running for re-election, but I don't know if they're all crummy, terrible Mitt Romney people or if they're
terrible. They're all crummy and terrible, Tom.
That doesn't surprise me.
I'm sure they're all going to be crummy and terrible.
But are any of them going to run on the right sorts of things? I mean, if because the thing is, running as a national candidate on anti-COVID measures might still be a political loser, even now. But in certain geographical areas, it wouldn't be a political loser. And then, not to mention, we saw those interesting elections in New Jersey and Virginia, which were not entirely referenda on COVID, it's true. But that was not the outcome that I think the blue staters were expecting. Maybe that does mean people are ready to either stay home or vote for somebody else unless there's some moderation on this. I mean, maybe it's wishful thinking on my part.
You know, I feel as if COVID didn't really play a part in the 2021 elections at all. I think it was much more about CRT and a chance to vote against what Biden is trying to do. This is basically, in a binary democracy, your only opportunity to demonstrate displeasure with the ruling establishment. I don't think Joe Manchin's a dummy. And his state voted 70% for Trump. It was something crazy like that, 70-30. It was the second reddest state after Wyoming. So at a certain point, he's, you know, at the mercy of his voters. He barely squeaked through his last Senate election, despite being enormously popular, being a former governor, and so on and so forth. So I also think, you know, Mitch McConnell is a snake. And I think he's best when he's in opposition and when he's twisting the knife. And I think he's going to exploit any fractures in the Democratic Party that he can. And I think that's going to be hilarious to watch.
And of course, there certainly are fractures, which have been interesting to watch. It's funny, people thought that because of Trump, it was the Republican Party that was deeply divided, because you had the Never Trumpers and you had Trump, and you had people reluctantly coming on the Trump bandwagon, but they kind of wished he hadn't been around. But geez, inside the Democratic Party, and that's why it's funny for me sometimes to hear in the libertarian world, people say, I don't know why libertarians fight with each other all the time. You know, we've got to just knock that off. That's just a unique libertarian characteristic. No, it isn't. What are you talking about?
Of course not. It's insane.
Have you looked at the Democratic Party and the squad and how they feel about Pelosi and the rest of them?
Yeah, or Sanders and Hillary, or the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks. And yeah, Jeb versus Trump. Yeah, it's nonsensical.
Yeah.
And it's also, we should all work together. It's like, well, what if I don't want to work with you? What if I think just because you agree with me, you could still be a net loss?
So what does this mean? Obviously, Biden's not up for re-election, but it's obviously these off-year elections are always a referendum on the sitting president. That's the nature of it. So what does it mean? Does it mean that even though the Republicans don't deserve it, they might make some serious advances in 2022?
I mean, it's going to take nothing to make so-called serious advances. They need to pick up one Senate seat, and they need to pick up five House seats, which from my understanding, due to redistricting as a result of the census, it's already a given. So unless it's a Democratic wave year, which just seems to me very hard to do for the simple reason that Biden isn't Obama, right? It's hard to imagine him hitting the road and getting everyone excited. Or if, God forbid, something happens to him, I don't wish well on people, and Kamala Harris is president, she's not going to be getting out the vote for the left either.
Oh, she's no. I mean, what a choice that was.
Right? But I mean, there's lots of people who, if they had been, you know, the president or something like that, would be in a position to kind of, like, Clinton was good on the stump. Like, he would get people excited. Obama was probably the king of this in our lifetime. Trump is probably the only comparable to him. But Biden is not that guy. This isn't even a personal attack against Biden. Like, he's not that guy who gives a speech and everyone leaves there is all pumped. That's not his thing.
No. No, that's true. Well,
you know,
all this reminds me of something that I want to ask you about. It turns out that judges are even more important than we may have realized. Now, remember, of course, in your book, you have the chapter on The Myth of the Rule of Law by John Hasnas. And I was reading something that came out of, I think, Robert Barnes, that very interesting lawyer I think you've had on the show, haven't you?
Yes, okay. Sir.
All right. And he was saying, I can pretty much tell you, based on which president appointed them, how judges are going to behave. Now, he's not, it's not 100%. You know, sometimes there are people who are independent-minded. But for example, the Obama judges will always rule in favor of government power. I mean, almost 100% of the time. And so now we're facing, you know, vaccine mandates, and potentially maybe the Supreme Court could wind up ruling on the issue of vaccine mandates. And this is something that affects the livelihoods of tens of millions of people and could upend the lives of many millions of people. And it's going to be decided ultimately, or at least very likely, by 9 judges. And it'll be decided by 5 judges, really.
Yeah.
And that's incredible. And so it seems like you could make a good case for what movement conservatives have actually been saying for a long time, I'm sorry to say, which is that, okay, you may not like our candidate, but you cannot afford to have the other side appointing the judges. And I said, oh, they hold you hostage all the time with the stupid judges. And then half the time, their judges aren't any good. But the thing is, half the time, they are good. And right now, we really need at least half the judges to be semi-decent because of this situation. Is that a good case for saying, I guess you got to just bite the bullet and vote Republican because judges really matter?
If we're going to talk about predictions, let's talk about predictions. Because I talked about this with Ron Coleman, who's another great attorney. And his point was, we've seen precedent. If this vaccination stuff reaches the Supreme Court, you should have no hope that they're going to strike it down. And I can make that case very easily from a legal perspective. John Roberts especially has the view, and this is the Jeffersonian view, right? That the court should defer to the legislature. And it's very hard to make the case for these judges, these nine judges, that in an emergency situation, and again, you can say whatever you want, but in terms of the law, it's not like interest rates being 10% is not an emergency situation. When you have a universally recognized global pandemic, legally, it's not. I'm just looking through all the hoops a lawyer is going to have to get through. And these are not big hurdles for a lawyer to get through. He's got to convince the court that we are in a genuine emergency, which is going to be pretty easy to convince these nine judges. And you have to convince the court that in a genuine emergency, the legislature or the state governments have some kind of powers they wouldn't be allowed in other situations. That's going to be an easy one to prove. And then you have to prove that, okay, what we're asking people to do isn't really deleterious to them, which they're all going to accept at face value. So I think it's going to be really hard to get, other than maybe Clarence Thomas, any of these judges to strike down this vaccine stuff.
Really? So Barnes has the opposite view.
Really? Let me hear it.
Well, it's, I don't know what the...
Wait, can I say one thing? There's also a certain percentage of the population who thinks that just because you expect the courts to vote a certain way, that you agree with that outcome or the reasoning. I'm just saying this is how they think.
Right.
I'm not saying they're right.
No, I understand that.
Okay. Just want to clarify that.
But I have to go back and look at, because somebody in my private group takes really good notes. Like he listens to Barnes and when he speaks and releases stuff, and he takes notes and summarizes it for us to read. But what I recall is his argument that, you know, you have to remember that the court is not, contrary to the mythology, is not impervious to political pressure.
Of course.
They're not on a platonic mountaintop entertaining abstract ideas. And
yeah.
And he says that Barrett would be the one that you would think might be the squishiest in this case. She's brand new and, you know, and she's not particularly a firebrand. But he says that the fact that movement conservatism seems to really be turning against these mandates gives her the permission she needs to come out against them. So he actually thinks that it's not unlikely that they would actually vote to strike it down. In fact, he's seemed fairly confident that they would. So now it's hard to know which one to think, because I trust both of these people and the way they look at the world. I mean, I think the way you describe it does make it sound fairly grim. On the other hand, there have been cases of places where there have been disruptions because people just won't get it, and the healthcare sector has taken a hit because healthcare workers won't get it. I wonder if any of that proves to be enough to force them to crack or make some extra provision or what. I don't know. I don't know if it's enough. There are a lot of polls that say I'll do whatever it takes to not get this injection. I'll even give up my livelihood. But when push, you know, Mises used to say, you can send me all the questionnaires you want, but what matters is when they're at the cash register, are they taking their money out and buying? That's the only thing I care
right.
about.
Right. Well, I mean, that's my thinking on this, but I don't have much hope in the Supreme Court as a bulwark of personal liberties.
No, I don't either. I don't either, because it lets you down. But at the same time, I was surprised to see that consistent array of lower courts come out really swinging. I mean, not just, it wasn't by a hair. It was, this is an absolutely unthinkable, unspeakable outrage. I mean, there was some almost intemperate language used in some of it. You know, so there is that. And these are also political appointees. So who knows? So what do you think by the end of 2022? I mean, of course, it's very hard to predict, because it also depends on, is there another scary variant that they're able to get everybody hysterical about? But do you think, let's say the end of this year, people are living more normally than they are now?
That's a great question. And I think...
Isn't it sad that it's a great question? You know, I wish this were an easy question.
I remember I was on, again, we keep going back to Twitter, and someone was making the case that Florida is free because we don't have to like wear masks everywhere. And I'm like, the fact that shows how much the Overton window has moved.
Yeah.
That like not wearing a mask on your face is somehow now a symbol of freedom as opposed to a symbol of normalcy. that this is some kind of an exception to the otherwise norm. I think we tend to underplay how much of a purpose or value it gives to educated, urban, neurotic people to live in this state of fear and anxiety. This is giving them a way to externalize their mental disquiet. So to take that away from them, like you had them for 4 years with Trump, you know, peeing their beds. Now you have, you know, another couple of years for them to be in hysterics, and it's not their fault. It's the TV's fault. So to take that away from them, you're going to give them something else to be in a state of apoplexy about.
Hey, everybody, it is New Year's resolution time. And how many times have we resolved to be a better this or a better that and to accomplish this goal or that goal all under our own strength? Now, there's nothing wrong with that, but there's also nothing wrong with admitting that you need a little outside help. And maybe 2022 is the year you resolve to get better with a little help. So if you've been struggling with relationships or depression or anxiety or stress or a multitude of other problems we associate with mental health, let this be the year you reach out and get the help you need. I do not feel the slightest bit of shame in telling you that I myself have used BetterHelp when I needed it. BetterHelp matches you with your own licensed professional therapist based on your particular needs. You can schedule weekly video or phone sessions. You can send messages. You never have to leave your home. You don't have to be confined to the therapists in your geographical area who may not have the specialties you need. It's available to people all over the world. Anything you share is confidential. It's convenient, professional, affordable. Check out the testimonials being posted daily on their site. And by the way, if you feel like the therapist you were assigned isn't quite a fit for you, they'll get you another one. I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/woods. Join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp, HELP.com/woods. Let me see what you think about the way Alex Berenson breaks down the American population. He says it's 30, 40, 30. 30% are going to just do whatever the CDC says, come what may. Then there's another 30% that's exactly the opposite. They don't trust the CDC at all, and they have not been part of the hysteria at all. But it's that 40%. It's the people who aren't hectoring you or whatever. You know, it's the people who comply by having their mask down by their chin, but they're not going to speak up or say anything. And half of them probably think it's probably the right thing to do. But that 40% is the one, you know, that has some hope of changing its mind. The 30%, the people you're describing, forget about it. They're going to be the way they are, and there's nothing you can do. But there do seem to be little bits of polling data and anecdotal evidence suggesting that that 40% is starting to break toward the DeSantis way of looking at the world. And that's the key thing. Will there be more and more of those by the end of the year? Now, in 2021, despite the craziness going on in other countries, despite the fact that I basically couldn't travel around the world, there are places I wanted to go to Hungary. You can't get in. I wanted to go to Sweden. They suddenly cut that off to Americans. And so there are a lot of major problems. But I went to some big concerts, like some big, big major events of the sort the biggest hysterics said would never occur again. We're never going to meet in big crowds again, I was reading in The Atlantic and other places. Well, that's just not going to happen. We have to adapt. And yet I had those experiences. And I was in Vegas casinos, and I did all kinds of interesting things, traveling, and I led a mostly normal life in 2021 that maybe in the depths of despair in 2020, I might have thought I never would get to do again. So there is that. Will there be, you know, will that 40% cut our way is, I guess, what I'm... Do you think it is this 30, 40, 30 also?
No, I don't think it's at all. First of all, there's also an asymmetry between how much are these 30 and 30 represented in social media and corporate media, right? So I don't think they're symmetrical in that regard at all. I think anyone who there's a huge asymmetry towards stifling people who question, as you've seen, the COVID narrative, even if you're a medical professional. So, you know, you have to be on tenterhooks before you post on Instagram, for example, people getting banned all the time. So that is one asymmetry. I'm always skeptical when there's equal numbers. Just as a rule, it's really rarely the case. And that's usually indicative of just sloppy thinking
although I don't want to say that in Alex's case, most certainly. I think in terms of what percent would do anything the CDC says, it's going to be a lot higher because these are the like Biden voters. Like if you were just told to vote for the senile corpse and you do it, that's a big percentage of the population.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. At the same time, we've seen some little bits of indication. Yes, it's true that the blue states are going a little bit nuts, but in Connecticut, they've seen hospitalizations go up from COVID, and the governor has resisted calls for another mask mandate. And likewise, I think in Colorado, we heard,
yeah,
you're going to have to just figure this out for yourselves at this point, people, but we've done everything we can. And I wonder if that has penetrated into even some blue state thinking. And even David Leonhardt in the New York Times has been trying to ratchet down the hysteria. Maybe that is a harbinger of something.
Here's something I don't understand, and this sounds like I'm being sarcastic or a rhetorical question, and please explain to me as best you understand. I can't follow the alleged train of thought between, okay, there's a new variant, we're going to close down our nation's borders, even if the variant has already been detected inside our nation. Is there any possibility that that variant isn't going to hit your country at some point? I don't understand. Can you explain this to me?
I agree. I don't understand that either. And so, in fact, Fauci was asked that early on. What is the point of these things when there's really no way to keep the virus from getting here? And it may well be here, but also to say that it's all over Europe already, and we're not blocking those countries. And whereas it had not been detected in any, but as far as I recall, South Africa had it. But then they closed travel to a bunch of other African countries that are really poor and that probably don't want to have this done to them, and they didn't even have it. And so Fauci said, "You make a good point, and it would be great if we could get that reversed."
Oh,
yeah. So he even acknowledged that. But the thing is, we're dealing with some, and I'm not talking about epidemiologists, I'm talking about average Americans who think that there's some magic solution to make this thing go away. And they think that experts in charge can stop it. And so they, of course the solution seems nonsensical, but they're committed to the idea that human effort can put a stop to this. And so I don't find that they're really critically examining anything. You know, the answer, if you were to bring that up, would be, wise guy, what do you suggest? If your house is on fire, and you're pouring gasoline on it, it doesn't matter if I have any water or not.
Right.
I could still say to you, you shouldn't do that.
Yeah. Okay.
So, let's just put it this way. Is there a white pill and a black pill version of how 2022 might go?
Well, the white pill version is that the white pill will be out.
Yes, that would be a white pill.
Here's the black pill version. The black pill version is if they really do start detaining, raiding people's homes and, detaining people who are unvaccinated and like putting them in concentration camps, something like that. Like that is, I think, still very unlikely, to put it mildly, but there's bills being talked about in New York. Who knows how much support they have, giving the governor all sorts of powers. But they're doing stuff in like Austria and in other parts of Europe that are very disturbing. So that would be a black pill possibility for sure.
And I know that people say, don't fool yourself by thinking it can't happen here. But as I said, a lot of these people are saying, if we're going to push back against this, the pushback is going to start in the US. And I do feel like there are some things that the bad guys could get away with in other countries that, not that they couldn't do them here, but that it would be more difficult. I mean, for all the things I say about the U.S. Constitution, the fact is that there is something of a culture of free speech that I think has emanated from our history of having a First Amendment. So it's harder to get restrictions on free speech enacted in law in the U.S. than in other places. So I don't know. I don't know if I'm fooling myself or not, but I still feel like at some point, people want to live their lives again. And as I said, I've seen so many people saying, we did everything you told us to do. How can you possibly be threatening us with lockdowns again? I've even seen this in our Canada, a Reddit thread for Canada, just for mainstream Canada, not libertarian Canada. And they were talking about lockdowns there. And people were saying, enough is enough. This is it. We have been cooperative up to now, but this is ridiculous. How can you possibly be talking about lockdowns? And then, so even these blue pill people were saying, look at the hospitalization numbers. Look at these numbers. Suddenly they want to look at the numbers and they realize it does not justify any of these measures. I don't know if anything comes of that, but that's not my imagination. That's really happening. So
one of the things I always say is that the corporate press does not have a bias. They have an agenda.
Yeah.
And an example of this is, you know, if someone writes an article and they're libertarian, they're going to have tend to find the things that validate libertarianism to be more cogent. And, you know, the state's probably going to be the bad guy and so on and so forth. And that's probably inevitable. You can mitigate to some extent by trying to write objectively and consciously, but it's not easy to do for anybody, right? The best you could do is just try to be open with your biases and with yourself and with your work. An agenda is when you just intentionally, you know, don't include information because it doesn't further your case. And a great example of this is happening right now with what you're talking about, which is you'll see no shortage of people posting these charts about Omicron, and there are these huge spikes in terms of cases. And of course, the impression anyone would get, if there's any disease and there's a huge spike of cases, that's a problem. There's no arguing with that. But then when you look at the chart in terms of deaths, it's a complete flatline.
Yeah.
And that's when you know, okay, this person doesn't have a bias, they have an agenda. They're not giving you the entire context. And frankly, if COVID developed in such a way that everyone gets it and no one has any real serious consequences of it and they get antibodies as a result, that's how COVID would end.
That's the way most of us have been thinking. So we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
And I'm very glad. This isn't an I told you so. I'm very, very glad that we're at a point where disease seems to be enormously, like infinitely less deadly. Because I don't want people dying.
No, of course we're not. Of course not. Let me say one more thing before we wrap up. The thing is, I really enjoy international travel and I like when people from other countries visit here. And I have friends who just are not going to get this jab. And so that means what? I can never see them again. And yet, how big of a constituency is it that says, hey, let's remove vaccination requirements for people to get in the US? There's no constituency for that, even though there are people who would like to see it happen. So who has the political capital to implement something like that? So does this mean that these people are just cut out of our country forever?
And I don't want to keep bailing out the airline industry and the travel industry, because that's going to be a necessary consequence of, you know, all this stuff.
Oh, without a doubt. And now, I just found out Boston, where I grew up not too far from there, Boston's implementing the vaccine passport. And like New York City, by March, they're going to have it also be for ages 5 and up. And since you can't get the vaccine at age 5 and up in other countries, then there's no international tourism and there's not much domestic tourism. You should be up in arms about this if you have a business in Boston, but unfortunately, no one is going to be and they'll just get away with it. It's unbelievable. I specifically visited there in the fall because I had a feeling it might be the last time I'd be there for a while. It's very sad.
It's very sad.
Many such cases, I'm sorry to say.
Yes, yes, sir.
Many such cases. Well, I don't know how to on what note to leave this other than, doggone it, let's hope for a white-pilled outcome.
Or how about here's to a healthy and happy 2022 for you and everyone else listening.
Yes, correct. Correct.
How about that?
Regardless of what the future holds for us, all the best to all of us and let's all stick together. And those of us listening in to Michael and me, we're all in this together, not the lizard people. It's us in this together. And thanks so much for listening today.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at Podsworth.com.